Rebound goes to A-State. Jackson up ahead to Freddie. He'll throw it down with a big right hand.
Robinson swings, hits this one well, deep to left field. This ball is going back, and it is gone.
Cobb will return it from the two. Running left across the 15-20. Cuts back right across the 25-30. Chauncey across the 40. Chauncey Cobb across midfield. 40-30. Cobb takes it 98 yards to the house.
Welcome to the Second to None podcast, the A-State podcast, presented by First National Bank and Cavanaugh Auto Group. Now, here's Matt Stoltz and Brad Bobo.
Coming up, plenty of basketball talk. The women were on the road making the Alabama swing. The men at home this past week. They were wrapping up a four-game homestand. Tennis and track and field getting ready to return to action this weekend. Bowling is also back in action this weekend. They'll begin their spring portion of the schedule, competing at the Northeast Classic in Newcastle, Delaware. And speaking of bowling, some really big news this past week as NTCA First Team All-American Maggie Toma went to Las Vegas. She participated in the USBC Team USA trials, and after 5 days of competition, Maggie was selected to Team USA. And we're happy.
USA.
Happy to have Maggie in studio. First off, congratulations, Maggie.
Thank you.
What was that feeling like? Who was the first person you called after you got named to Team USA?
Oh my gosh, I immediately called my mom as soon as I got back. I did not think they were going to call my name because I didn't make the automatic spots. And so they went selection and they picked a girl who was lower than me in the standings. So I thought I got overpassed. And for a second, I got nervous. Coach got nervous. And then they called me and I went, there's no way. It was unbelievable. I got to the hotel room. I called my mom. Her and my dad were screaming, congratulating me. Everybody was blowing up my phone. Just, you deserve it. Everything happened so fast.
And I know, you know, Mark Taylor's with us. You'll put some of this stuff in the release. But for people listening to this, tell them what that means. You're on Team USA. Okay, we see it, and we know that's awesome. But what's it mean? What happens from here?
Basically, I am one of the top athletes in the country, which is still weird to say. They travel internationally. I know the youth team is going to Malaysia. I think we go to some places in South America. And if they pick me to travel, I get to go to those, which is going to be crazy because I haven't really been out of the country. But being able to travel like with the top athletes, like all these professional bowlers that I've always looked up to, I was like, I'm now with them on a team that I had to work so hard for over the past few years.
And you were competing with some of the best bowlers in the entire country to try to get this spot on Team USA. 132 people were competing. You placed eighth. It was a pretty grueling competition, I'm guessing, because you were there for 5 days. You played 30 games. So take us through the whole process of what you went through last week.
Oh, my. So, yeah, it's basically they pick five of basically the most tough, challenging patterns you'll ever see. Each day you have six games, which already is a lot. And then you just add on every day. So these patterns are already so tough to do. But then you just find a way around it. And then the point system for each day, it's different than any other tournament, so you have to take that into account. But it's just a long week. You have to take it really slow and stay patient because everything can happen so fast. And one small change can just bring you up or down in the standings drastically.
So she said every day they put the oil on the lanes in a different way. So dumb it down for me and the rest of us in that the ways they can do that that makes it hard.
Yeah, so usually whenever you go bowling, there's like a house pattern, which is that you have a lot of oil. It's usually like 40 feet out of the 60. So these patterns, you'll have maybe 23 mils was the lowest I think we bowled on. It'll be like 38 feet, which is already short. And so you have to have specific balls for these patterns drilled certain ways. But the oil, the way it's laid out can really affect how your ball motion is down lane. And if you don't know how to play it, or if you're in the wrong zone, you can leave a lot of splits, miss some spares. So you have to know the lane condition and how to play it. And that's why it's so difficult each day, because it always changes so fast.
You feel like you got to be kind of part engineer sometimes to figure out some of this stuff?
Sometimes, yeah.
One really cool thing that you did last week, and Mark Taylor had sent me the video yesterday, you picked up what they call a Big Four pickup.
Yes.
It's a 4-6-7-10 split. And this is something that professional bowlers convert at a rate of 1%. But watching the video, it's clear that you saw you knocked over the 6 and the 10.
Yes.
But then you turned around. I'm guessing you didn't think you picked up that split.
You know, that's one that you don't think you're ever going to pick up. You just hope to get count. So you hope to get 2. But then looking back at the video, you see my ball went in the back and the pin reflected off of it and ricocheted, which is really just up to chance. So I was just shocked to see it even kick over. And then at last second, I saw them both fall down. And I was like, oh, I turned around way too early.
You answered what was going to be my next question. And it's an interesting sort of insight to kind of the mental approach is that obviously you want to pick that spare up. But in some ways, that's not what you're trying to do. You want to make sure you got 2 of them.
Yeah. So when you leave a spare and the chances are so low, they're in the really low percentages, you really just want to make pins at that point. Like even with like a Greek church, you have 3 or 2, go for the 3. You're going to make up pins eventually. But at that point, there's a low chance you're going to make it. Just try to get as many as you can. And if you make it, it's just, it looks cool.
Really cool for a lot of reasons that you made Team USA. Obviously, you're one of 14 on the team, and you talked about some of the places you get to go. But you're not the only Red Wolf on the roster.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I love it.
Jordan Richard Snodgrass, who was a great bowler in the early days of A-State bowling, and she's gone on to become a professional bowler of the year. We've actually had her on this podcast before, but she's on the team with you. So how cool is that? And how much interaction did you guys have last week?
We would cross on some bowling lane sometimes. We'd always say hi. But whenever I got into that stage and they called her name, she immediately ran up and was like, I'm so happy for you. Like the way like we obviously get along with the fact that we all were Red Wolves and we were just so happy for each other. She was really happy for me. I think she was also there when I made junior team a few years back and she knows how much this like means to me and how like now we can like just bond over that too.
So before this, like I'm going to ask kind of 2 ways.
Okay.
Over the years, over your time here, how much interaction you got to have with Jordan? And then also maybe if you go back to 4 years ago when you're trying to find a place, you know, how much did the fact that this program had produced people like Jordan kind of weigh in on your decision to come here?
So Jordan, every time I went to like a top event, like any professional event, basically like Team USA a few years back, you always want to run and say hi, just be friendly. But I knew this program whenever I was looking into bowling college was obviously one of the top programs. It was always my top pick. And you see schools like Wichita and Vandy coming out with all of these professional bowlers. I was like, they know how to make the best of the best. I want to be a part of that. I know that they're going to bring me to where I need to be.
First National Bank's roots run deep in Northeast Arkansas. We began a single Paragould branch with one idea. Customers first. By focusing on the best products banking has to offer and valuing the highest level of service, we're now 23 branches across Arkansas and Tennessee. As First National Bank grows, our roots only get deeper, and the mission remains the same. You first, always. Learn more about our products and services at fnbank.net. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Continuing to visit with Maggie Toma here on the Second to None podcast presented by First National Bank and by the Cavanaugh Auto Group. You can check out Cavanaugh's entire selection of new and pre-owned vehicles at CavanaughCars.com. You're from New Braunfels, Texas, right? Smack dab in between Austin and San Antonio. They're on I-35. So
yes.
Tell us about your family. How'd you get into bowling? Were they bowlers too?
Oh, absolutely. So my mom and dad actually met bowling over in California. And then when they brought it over, it's just a thing that the family always did. And then my older sister got into bowling. So when she was in high school, I started bowling in middle school. I didn't take it seriously until like 9 or 10. I did my first big national event, Junior Gold, one of the biggest youth events at 12 years old. So starting young just gets you there.
pretty neat. Your parents met bowling. Yeah. We had a volleyball player in here a couple of months ago, Mia Maloney, and her parents met playing volleyball. So I guess, in both these cases, it was meant to be.
All right. Absolutely. So we're going to spend some time getting started in bowling. Obviously, is the right way to segue into, for folks who may not know, it looks a little different when Maggie does it because you use two hands.
That I do.
We'll talk about why people do it, and it's obviously gaining popularity. But before we can get into that, when did you start using two hands?
I pretty much started it whenever I started bowling, taking it seriously. I did one-handed for a little bit, but it never really worked out. But then I think around like 9 or 10, whenever I started getting into like the bigger leagues, my dad was like, just throw it like this way, like as a joke. And then I kind of just ran with it. And then I just found coaches that can help me develop that, because at that time, nobody really did it, especially on the woman's side. Like every time people came up to me when I was little, they're like, you're the first one I've seen.
So you were doing it even before it kind of got to be a little bit of a fad, even with men's pros, you were already doing it?
Yeah, wow. I never saw the pros and was like, I want to do that. I kind of just did it on my own and then realized it was a different thing. It's a different story than like other people. And they're like, oh, I look up to that bowler because they bowl like that. But I kind of just did it and then didn't realize how different it was until a few years later.
This is how dumb I am. Just you hear the term two-handed bowler. I mean, what does that mean? Can you bowl with the right or the left? But you're bowling, you've got both hands on the ball. We talk about it becoming a fad, but what are the advantages? Why do people want to bowl with two hands more?
You kind of have a more sense of control. You are able to get more around the ball, so you get more revs, more speed. It's just not an easier way to bowl. It's just technically you do have more advantages. You have more power, which is like a really big thing in bowling. The more power you have, the more hits you can get. So I think it's just the power aspect of it that everybody is really leaning towards.
So I'm going to go a little bit of a tutorial here, because I've waited a long time, honestly, to have you in here to have some of these conversations. For people that bowl, obviously, typically you're going to put your middle finger, ring finger, thumb in the bowling ball. Is that the case for you?
For me, no. I just use my middle and my ring finger. I don't use a thumb, which does help you get out of the ball cleaner, which also is an advantage because the one-handed bowlers have to clear their thumb and then get around it. I could just get around it.
So do your bowling balls even have a thumb hole drilled?
No, absolutely not.
So somebody's going to walk and say, what the hell is this thing? Because I walk with a bowling ball with two holes in it.
Yeah, I know nobody can take my bowling balls because I'm safe.
I don't know if that's a major thing, is it? I mean, is bowling ball theft a big deal?
Not really, but it's more of if you look at other bags, like you have similar bowling balls, and I'm like, those are mine because they can't use those. Those are mine.
That's good. You definitely have your own look. One thing that's really cool is being able to practice in the facility that you do at the social. And yeah. I know one thing Coach Kostic loves about it is the fact that you can set up those particular situations and you've got these lanes there at the social where you can kind of do your own thing. But how do you think that gives you an advantage for yourself and for the team as well?
It definitely is an advantage. Like I know other bowling centers, you can't set up certain pins, so you really just have to go off a full rack when you do spares. But we can put out any pattern we want. We can set up any spares we want. We can just do practice our own way. We can put stuff on the lanes if we need to. So anything we need to do to practice, we can do.
You guys have that. So also, you have a clubhouse, an apartment, basically, right? A locker room.
It's really nice.
Yeah. This program has done everything you can do but one thing.
Yeah.
And it's been obviously painstakingly close to the one thing. So for you to come through and put your years in, like, what would it mean to you to get this thing over that last hump and win a national championship?
It would be everything. You know, out of my now 4 years here, two of them have been runner-up, going to game 7, which is the greatest thing you want to hear in sports. The last chance to get a win. It would really be everything. You know, you see how hard these girls work. Like half of us were at this team trials event and you see how good they're doing, how hard they push. And even like me and Carly, like we've lived through those two losses and you don't want to go through it again. Like you just want to get over that and finally be able to win and be able to show the school that we can do it.
Yeah, you've been so close. You talk about being a runner-up. That was your first 2 years at Arkansas State. Went to the NCAA tournament for a 17th consecutive season last year. Didn't make the Final Four, but I know you're ready to get back this season. And I want to know why this year's team can be the team. I know you wrapped up the fall really strong. You had a tournament win down in Louisiana at the Colonial Lanes Classic. You beat Nebraska. You swept Vanderbilt in the finals. So I'm guessing you've got a little bit of momentum going into the spring now.
Yeah, absolutely. We are taking those last few tournaments and learning from those and definitely taking it into the spring. We see these girls, we have the power. We have a really powerful team. And I think if we're just able to take it one match at a time against all these other top elite teams, we're able to get there. Like, we are right there. We just have to push through and make sure we don't get too ahead of ourselves or anything. But I really think this is the team. I really believe in all these girls.
You said you've been to Game 7 twice. So you know what a team that can win a national championship looks like. So what makes you so confident that this is a team that can win a national championship?
I think it's just the fact that we all have each other's backs. We know what each other can do. We've seen stressful situations. We all have the experience. We only have one new player coming in from last year, especially last year regionals, like not getting to that point again. It was kind of strange. But we know that we now have the experience to get through the humps that we need. And all the girls, like, we know pressure. We just have to be able to take it slowly and make sure we all have each other's backs and stay patient, really, at the end of the day.
Obviously, you've got a lot on the calendar now. College bowling season, you've got Team USA stuff now that is going to be coming up. But, you know, after this year, do you see yourself wanting to continue in bowling? Do you want to go pro?
I absolutely want to go pro. That's always been a thing I've always wanted to do. And I think the school has really showed me that it's possible. All the stuff that we've worked on immediately after graduation, there's a few events. Like, there's one back in Vegas, just at the center, I was just at. There's a few regionals all around the U.S. I definitely will get a little head start and immediately after graduation, go do these tour stops. I think it's something Coach really wants me to do that as well.
What's the biggest difference between Jordan or those other top pros and you right now? What would be the step you'd have to take?
I think it's just getting into the events and climbing the ranks and standings. Unfortunately, the PWBA did get rid of membership cards last year, I think, or this is the first year. So it kind of messed things up a little bit. So you're not technically a pro unless you meet certain standards. But just getting into those events and being able to climb the ranks and make TV shows, like, that's going to be the biggest thing.
And that's where I'm sure it's great to have somebody like Jordan to kind of guide you through this process,
yes.
Right?
Absolutely. You know, if I need somebody to go to that knows what I've gone through over here at school, I think she's always going to be the first person I go to.
Have you already graduated?
I have not. I graduate in May.
Well, what are you graduating in?
I'm going to get a degree in general studies in psychology and health studies.
So this is a kind of a good opportunity for you to talk about. There are ways at Arkansas State, and it sounds like Maggie's doing it, where you essentially can go make your own degree program. If it's not something there's a degree in, you can build it through what you're talking about and basically get a degree kind of what you want. So that's what you're doing. Why did you pick the things you picked?
Yeah, so my degree story is kind of weird. I originally came here with the idea that I was going to graduate in radiology. I was going to do radiography with MRI and all these other certificates. And then it kind of did not align well with athletics. After 2 years, I had to pull out of that and then go into this other degree, which I was going to keep doing psych and anything health related. I do want to work in that field, but this sort of was like a backup plan because the radiology didn't work out, but I'll always get back to that.
Well, you mentioned the psych part, and Mark and I were, he sent me information, and so I would ask, because kind of back to your guys' team, is that on the sports psychology side of things, you guys are now working with a guy in Memphis named Greg Graber,
yeah,
who also works with the Grizzlies, and like I think he and Kostic met on a flight or something, kind of some random story. So talk about what sort of things y'all work with Greg on as it pertains to the mental side of this thing.
Yeah, so we really focus on staying calm, staying in the shots. He's been really big on breathing techniques and like meditation and noting down important stuff. I think he's really helped his team a lot this year. Coach did meet him on a flight. It was a long story. He came back so excited to talk about it. It was so funny. But he's really been helping us a lot with, like, if we're in a stressful situation, just slowing it down, breathing and staying calm, making sure we're able to repeat shots. But he's been coming in a few times, and I've seen definitely an improvement with all the girls, like mental side of athletics, which I think is a really cool thing because we've never had a guy like that to come in and talk to us about all of that.
Well, you've told us a little of your story. I mean, obviously parents are bowlers. You've grown up in bowling centers your entire life, mm-hmm. worked with multiple teachers and coaches along the way. You're on Team USA. You want to spend your adult life bowling. So you've been around bowling.
Yes.
But have you ever been around another person who likes to talk bowling more than Justin Kostic?
Absolutely not. I don't think that's possible to be beat.
We knew the answer before you said it.
Yeah, that one's a tough one to beat. I don't know.
I love it.
So I do want to address one thing, full transparency here. We're in the parking lot, and everybody's getting out of their vehicles at the same time. We're walking into the radio station, and Mark Taylor, as you're walking across, says, "Hey, Big Marge." And I thought, well, you big jerk. I mean, why are you calling her Big Marge? Well, apparently, and you know, for people who haven't seen Maggie, she's not a big girl at all. I'm finding out now this is actually something that your teammates call you, I guess. Where did that come from?
Yeah, so it's kind of funny because I'd walk into a place and people would be like, "That's Big Marge." But yeah, so I've been getting called Big Marge since, like, I think it really happened senior year of high school. Like, somebody just said it as a joke. And then they're like, "Well, did you have nicknames in high school?" And I was like, "Well, people call me Big Marge." And then they just ran with it. And so, like, every time I bowl, like, if I get a really good strike, coach is in the back screaming Big Marge. If I do really good, he'll call me Mega Marge. And if I do bad, he'll call me, like, Small Marge. I don't know. But I think it's funny because I'm also just, like, scrawny. And so you say Big Marge, and then you look at me. It just looks weird.
Well, you just can't go with Large Marge because that was taken a long time ago in Pee-wee's Big Adventures.
Yeah. So I got a new name.
It definitely sticks. And it sounds like, you know, whatever you're doing right now, you need to stick with it. This has been fun. We really appreciate you coming in today, kind of hearing your story a little bit. Congratulations again on Team USA, and good luck the rest of the season, Maggie.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Get huge savings now at every Kavanaugh dealership. Kavanaugh has a great selection of late model, low mileage, certified pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. And most are still under factory warranty. We have every make and every model, so you're sure to find the vehicle you want. And when you buy at Kavanaugh, every new and used purchase comes with 1 year of free maintenance. Plus, we buy cars. Bring a vehicle, get a check. Come see us today at one of our dealerships or go to KavanaughCars.com.
Wrapping things up here on the Second to None podcast presented by Kavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank, where they put you first always. Men's basketball, they finished off their four-game homestand last week, and they did it in a big way. A couple of wins and they're two games. Wednesday night, it was a rematch of the Sun Belt Championship game from a season ago, sort of. We talked last week about how...
Yeah, it's same schools.
It was the same schools.
Nothing is a rematch.
Nobody. No coaches, no players from last year for the Red Wolves. However, Troy looked very much the same. They had 10 players back from last year's championship team, which is a big number nowadays. And
yeah, it is.
Of course, Scott Cross is still there. He's done a great job with that program. That was a Troy team that had won five in a row. They were off to a 3-0 start in conference play, and the Red Wolves came out and played really well. They won the game 86-74, led by as many as 20 in the second half, and really just out-toughed them. They out-rebounded Troy 44-30. Christian Harmon had a big night. He had 18 points. And one of the things that stands out to me from that game is the conversation I had in the postgame with Christian, because he brought up last year. I thought that was interesting because that was something they actually talked about. What happened with last year's team in the championship game? That was a source of motivation for them, even though nobody that's currently around was there for that championship game. That helped motivate them to that win.
Overall, not to jump ahead to Saturday, but I'm going to lump this in there with it. Just over the span of that four-game homestand, I thought we had four really good crowds.
Yeah.
Great environments. I thought the Arkansas Tech game is what it is, but there wasn't a lot of reason or opportunity for the crowd to make a lot of noise at the Arkansas Tech game. still the crowd was good. Those three conference games is really good. And then I thought, man, the run we went on to start the second half against Troy, and you could see Scott Cross was, you know, because it already hit the 16-minute mark, and he was trying to get a dead ball before he had to call a timeout.
Sure.
And in the meantime, you know, we scored a couple more times, went up 20, and he finally ended up having to take the timeout anyway. That stretch right there where after we scored to go up 20 and those few seconds there into and coming out of him calling timeout, not just the loudest I know it's been this year. I don't know if I can go pick out a spot even last year where I thought it was louder than that moment right there.
It was a great atmosphere. The fans brought it, and they did again on Saturday.
Good job, yeah.
In the Texas State victory, 83-82, to complete the season sweep of the Bobcats, third straight year we've swept those guys. Right now, that's the last matchup on the schedule with Texas State. Could see them in Pensacola in a couple of months, but as it stands right now, it's a six-game win streak over Texas State. Look, it wasn't the best game that the Red Wolves had played. I know Coach Pannone wasn't exactly happy after the game. He was happy with the win, but there were some things to build upon. But I don't recall a game like this. I want to see what you think, because three times in the first half where A-State led by 10. That was the largest lead of the game. They were up 6 at the half. And then somewhere between a tie and a 4-point lead for such a good part of the second half. It was so close. Texas State just would never go away. But the Red Wolves never trailed in a game where they eventually won by one.
That is
but
weird.
But it was a single-digit game the entire second half, but A-State never once trailed in that game, and they go on to win at 83-82.
And as weird as it sounds, there wasn't a point where, even down the stretch or late, there wasn't a time where I didn't think we were going to win the game.
Yeah, you still felt confident because Texas State never
even
had
though
got
it was
over the
so,
hump.
Even that the tied or 1 point and all this and that, still thought, well, we'll win the game. And we did.
Out-rebounded them 43-32. And that toughness on the boards, we talked about it against Troy, but that's a Texas State team that's still leading the league in rebounding margin. And in the two wins over Texas State, the Red Wolves were a combined plus 27 on the glass. You know, they're plus 16 in San Marcos, plus 11 the other day. I think that tells you a lot about just how good of a rebounding team this is. And then Chandler Jackson, man, he's fun to watch. He had 16 points, 4 assists, 3 steals. He was one really good point guard in the building the other day.
Yeah.
Thought it was really neat to have Caleb Fields back in the house. All-time A-State great, and was sitting right there in the first row. And I love the fact that you were able to put him on the video board during one of the media timeouts, and he got a well-deserved standing ovation.
And, like, helped arrange that seat for him. And then the week before, you know, on Saturday, Bobby Gross was sitting in that same seat.
Yeah.
And we put him on the video board. But when Caleb got seated, I said, hey, in the second half, man, you're going to stay in the seat, because in that floating timeout, first time a coach calls one, putting you on the camera, and he just kind of looked at me weird. Not weird like, hey, I'm not going to do it, just weird like, why? And it's like,
you're Caleb Fields.
Yeah, and
why.
I think he found out why. I mean, that we talked about the Troy game, that timeout may have been the loudest it was all year, but I'm not sure that the Caleb Fields reception wasn't the loudest it was all day during the Texas State game.
Yeah, I think fans certainly appreciate everything Caleb did. And I love the fact that, you know, even in this age of the portal, and I was having this conversation with Coach Pannone after the game the other night, I think it's important to keep those guys that are recent players coming back. You know, I know we're getting to know a brand new team this year, but Caleb was in the first row the other night on the court.
Yep.
But right behind him in the first row of the lower level was Avery Feltz.
Right. And I thought it was important, and there were other former players there too I heard about, but like, remember, clear back to when we dropped the banner. I thought it was important to have a connection to that team. We, you know, as they unveiled the championship banner from last year, you know, we had Avery Feltz and Zane Butler standing on the floor.
Yeah.
As a lover of the history of this place, I mean, I'm always going to want to try to find a way to plug in former players just because I love that stuff. But our fans love that stuff too. And, I mean, that was on full display Saturday.
The men now 12-5 overall. They're 4-1 in conference play. Tied for second in the Sun Belt standings. They're a half game back of Southern Miss. Southern Miss at 5-1 in league play. And, of course, Their only conference loss is a home loss to the Red Wolves. So A-State's won 9 out of 11. They're going on the road for the next 4. They've got a tough week this week.
Tough couple.
It starts with the Alabama swing. This week, they'll be at South Alabama Thursday night at 7. South Al just handed Georgia Southern their first loss in conference play on Saturday. And then we got a rematch with Troy coming up Saturday afternoon at 3:30. You can bet that's going to be really intense.
This next 2 weeks, you do that and you go to the Georgia schools next week. If 3 weeks down the road, the men get home and they're anywhere in that top 2-3 in the standings, then you're set up to know you're a championship contender.
Women's basketball. They made the Alabama swing this past week, completed the season sweep of South Alabama on Thursday.
Golly.
I'd say they did it in pretty impressive fashion. 107-67 in Mobile. 7th most points in a single game in school history. You pointed this out to me the other day. They led 69-35 at the half. So they scored more points in the first half than South Alabama did for the game. I can't remember seeing something like that.
We had, and we came up empty twice at the end of the first half, had two different cracks at getting over 70 in the first half. It was just a clinic. If this team gets off to a fast start, then you're in trouble. Because, again, everything's based on the fact that they're going to have more left in the tank in the fourth quarter than you do anyway. So if they leave you just the second and the third quarter to try to play from behind, then they've kind of got you right where they want you.
De'Ara Allen led the way for the Red Wolves in Mobile with 20 points. It was the 12th consecutive win, 4th longest win streak in school history. Unfortunately, it did come to an end on Saturday, playing at Troy, first matchup with the Trojans this season, and Red Wolves falling in that one, 86-64. Didn't shoot it well, shot just 31% for the game, got out-rebounded 56-35. You can bet this team's going to find some motivation from that loss. They're still sitting in really good shape. 14-4 overall, 5-1 in conference play. Tied for 2nd in the standings. And after 5 in a row on the road, I know they're going to be happy to be at home for the next 4. They'll host the Cajuns Thursday at 7 and then Southern Miss Saturday at 2.
Both games, first home games of 2026. So you actually can get 2 tickets for $6 to both games this week. People have been excited about the women getting home after this 5-game road trip. I'm actually kind of glad. If you told me, hey, they're not going to win at Troy, then that's just it, then I'd say, I hope they get clobbered because they'll come home pissed. If you do, you know, nip and tuck and Troy just made a couple plays late and won, oh, and you're kind of sad. Well, I don't want them sad. I like this bunch mad, and I think
well, they'll be mad.
I know their head coach, and I figure she's mad enough for the both of us. And so if you're going to lose one time every 13 games, then what do I care what the margin is?
What a win streak, though. How impressive to go and win 12 in a row against the kind of competition that they did, and so many road wins during that span. So
I know, anyway, people are excited. I mean, talking during the whole course of this road trip about when do the women get home. So Thursday at 7, and be checking our social media if you hadn't already seen it for a link to where you can get those 2 tickets for $6.
Couple of other notes here. The tennis team will be starting their spring portion of the schedule coming up this weekend. They're going to be in Tuscaloosa. They'll take on Alabama on Saturday, and then they'll face North Alabama on Monday. I've seen Sujay Lama a couple of times over the course of the past week or so, and he talked about this being a challenge, but I think he's excited about this weekend.
Oh, I think he's excited.
He's just excited
about
to wake up in the morning.
Yeah, I mean, that guy is something else, and he's done one heck of a job. And yeah, I look forward to seeing them get their spring going, and you know, track gets cranked up also.
Yeah,
and bowling.
Indoor track will be at the Samford Invitational in Birmingham this weekend. And, yeah, we mentioned earlier with Maggie that the bowling team will resume their schedule, their spring portion of the schedule. They'll be up in Delaware. Enjoyed our visit with her. That was fun.
Yeah, it was. And I've, like I said, been looking forward to getting that visit with her for a long time. And I think we waited for just the right occasion after she made Team USA.
Anything else we need to mention before we...
Nope. Hey, appreciate everybody during the homestand. The atmospheres and environments are good. And so hopefully, you know, we'll do it again coming up this weekend. Thursday and Saturday. And listen, I don't care. I mean, didn't win the Troy game. It doesn't diminish what happened in the weeks leading up to that. So it's kind of the first chance to welcome his team home and show them some love for the run they just went on.
Thanks again to Big Marge, Maggie Toma, for coming in today. Thanks to Mark Taylor for setting that up for us. Always appreciate you listening. Look forward to you joining us again next week for our next edition of the Second to None podcast presented by First National Bank and the Cavanaugh Auto Group.